Welcome back to the Make or Break a Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and we have another showcase edition of the show for you. We chat with Noah Lorang about how he makes 3D topographical maps of the United States. All right, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is another showcase edition of the show where every other week we feature a cool project that you guys are working on. If you guys would like to be on a future episode of the show, hit me up over on Instagram and make sure and tag your project with Make or Break Showcase, or just hit me up at the Make or Break shop and I'd love to bring you on. Love to feature some really cool things that you guys are building. And this week's episode is no different. We have a really, really cool project that is with Noah. Noah is the mastermind behind Elevated Woodworking. Encourage you guys to check him out. And he is doing some really cool stuff with CNC technology and making 3D topographical maps of the United States. And so he has ones that go together of the entire United States. He has them per state. He has a full business that he's running outside of his day job. And so the whole process is just crazy. The product is nuts too. So be sure and check him out on Instagram as well at Elevated Woodworking. But before we jump into the show, I want to let you guys know that this show is brought to you by our wonderful supporters over on Patreon. If you guys would like to support the show, the best way you guys can do that is at patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. There's a bunch of different reward levels, and it helps keep the lights on and keep this coming out 6 times a month. So every week, and then these Make or Break showcases every other week. Thank you. If you guys are already supporting, your support means a ton. And even if you guys don't want to support on Patreon, another really easy way to support the show and let people know that you like it is leaving a review over on iTunes or just sharing the link with a friend. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Noah. Noah, thank you so much for jumping on and chat with me. Super excited. You're making some pretty insane stuff. But yeah, thanks for jumping on and chatting with us.
Oh, yeah, no problem, man. Happy to do it.
Yeah, man. So we definitely want to get into the map project that you have been doing here lately, which is just insane. I reposted one of the pictures you did and people just went crazy about it. Just super cool. But before we get to the point that you're at now, was building and making, was that a thing for you, like growing up, or was it more on the computer side of things?
Yeah, so going kind of way back to when I was a kid, my dad was always doing stuff, kind of carpentry stuff. He finished our basement in the house we lived in when I was a kid and did some other kind of outdoor carpentry type projects. And so I was always doing, you know, screwing little things together, kind of helping or not helping one way or the other. Yeah. And then kind of in middle school, high school, I started doing what I thought of as furniture woodworking. And I think the highlight of my projects in that period of my life was I made this really terrible bench out of poplar that was painted this really hideous shade of green. You know, the seat was just a board and the back was another set of boards that were at a 90 yeah. degree angle. It was hideous and uncomfortable. But that was kind of the first furniture project that I did. And then I went off to college and I studied mechanical engineering and got a job not in mechanical engineering. And then about 8 years ago, I bought a house and the house needed new floors and they didn't want to pay someone to do that. So I decided to install hardwood floors myself, which meant I needed a miter saw and an air compressor. And then I decided that we needed built-ins. And so I got a table saw and made some built-in cabinetry. And then kind of once you have a table saw and a miter saw and your garage is full of tools and wood, you might as well take woodworking up as a hobby again.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of been the thing that led me to what I do now, is just kind of started from one little project and snowballed.
Yeah. Yeah. So back in high school, like, was it a shop class or was it just you're watching your dad do stuff? And so you wanted to get into it too?
No, it was just my dad and, watching, and, you know, he had his dad's tools and stuff like that. And so it was just kind of, I liked spending time in the garage or in the basement doing stuff. But never, you know, I think I've taken one day of formal shop class from a woodworking perspective, which was, I think I did like a 2-hour wood turning lesson when I was in high school.
Okay.
And that's it as far as woodworking instruction that I ever had.
Gotcha. And so in high school or in college, you said mechanical. So did you do any projects, like any actual physical builds in college on the mechanical side of things?
Yeah, so we did a bunch of different class projects. You know, we built a truss to test how strong it was, and you know, did a senior design project where you designed some mechanism. We did something for the welding industry. And so as part of that, one of the neat things about where I went to school at Carnegie Mellon is that there's a student shop available for mechanical engineering students, or now all engineering students. And so you took like a 6-week, 2-hour-a-week kind of class that covered kind of the basics of safety and how to use a milling machine and a metal lathe and a bandsaw and a drill press. And then after that, you had access to the shop. And you were able to go in there and work on stuff either for class projects or for kind of personal projects. And so I got to do a bunch of stuff for class projects. But then I also, it was when I was in college that I first kind of had the idea of, hey, I could build a computer-controlled router. And so I started building, kind of continuing the theme of building really terrible stuff. I built this really terrible computer-controlled router. And I think I succeeded in getting one axis of motion working, and it bound up, and it was just this terrible design, terrible construction. Yeah. But that was kind of my first taste with CNC. And then it sat in the shop for 3 years after I graduated until I finally went and picked it up.
That's funny. How were you figuring it out? Like, was there stuff online, or was you just trial and error?
Yeah, there was some stuff online. I remember this was kind of, almost 15 years ago. So there weren't the resources that are out there today, but I remember seeing online someone had built this really impressive milling machine, actually a CNC milling machine. And I said, wow, that looks really cool. And I think what I really was drawn to was all the aluminum parts that fit together really precisely. And so that plus, you know, a little bit of education about mechanisms and stuff like that. And I had this idea of, you know, you could take a couple of end plates of aluminum and a couple of steel polished rods and some bronze shafting, bronze sleeves, and you could make something that kind of worked. And there was a kit that you could send away for to get the motion control board that you then soldered together, you know, from the individual components, and that then connected over a printer port to your laptop running. I think back then still it was, there was still Mach 3 back then.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I went to Georgia Tech for aerospace engineering, and I was always, looking back on it, super jealous of all the mechanical folks, because like you guys would be in shops like making stuff, and like all of my stuff was just on paper or like 3D models, and I was like, man, I wish I'd done mechanical, because I never actually got to work with real tools. It was all like computer stuff. That's real cool. So you said so after college you didn't go into engineering, but then you wound up at Basecamp. Is that right? Is that where you still are at?
Yeah. So I now work for a company called Basecamp, which is a small software company, and I run data and analytics there. So when I finished college, I had thought about going to graduate school. I worked for a couple of years in college in a research lab, but I decided I didn't want to do graduate school. And so I took a job working for a consulting firm doing kind of business strategy. I did a lot of work in the healthcare industry. But the kind of core thing to me was always, I really like solving problems. And so mechanical engineering is a way to take a problem with the world and solve it with some mechanical system. When I did consulting, it was take a problem with a business and solve it with analytics and other techniques like that. And then I went to Basecamp to do basically the same thing of, you know, businesses, products have all these problems. So how can I solve them? And so kind of in my day job, I do it using data and numbers and analytics. And then kind of the other part of it is I like to solve other problems with my hands.
What about the analytics side of things drew you? Was it just another form of that problem solving that you got into?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved math and science and physics and experimentation. And the kind of nice thing about business analytics is you get kind of that same feeling of running a really great experiment in the lab, but you get to do it without actually running the experiment in the lab. And so it's just a really enjoyable thing to do, to say, here's a hunch that I have, or here's something that I observe in the world. Can I go find that and demonstrate that with data? Or here's an idea that I have. Can I do something and then observe the effect in data? And that's just a really satisfying feeling. It also, you know, is a little bit of kind of, I fell into it accidentally. So big strategy consulting firms have a real wide range of people, from people who just finished undergraduate, like myself when I was there, to people who have business degrees. And kind of the way it often works out is that if you're fresh out of undergrad and you did science or engineering in undergrad, you're going to end up getting the assignments that are more analytical heavy, because the assumption is that you know what you're doing, or you have that experience and that fluency. And so kind of I started doing consulting. I ended up doing more of the analytical work that kind of developed into a niche. And then before you know it, like now I'm what the industry has decided to call a data scientist. But it's kind of entirely an accidental path to that.
That's cool. That's real cool. We used Basecamp at my day job, and we love it. Especially the more I learn about the company, you guys do really cool stuff. And so you're fully remote, is that right? So even though what Basecamp is in Chicago, you still work out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So Basecamp is based in Chicago, but it's almost entirely a remote company. I think we've got 53 or 54 employees now, of whom probably 40 live outside of Chicago. So cool. I work from either my house or there's an office attached to my shop. And I go to Chicago 2 or 3 times a year to meet up with everybody and kind of see people in person.
That's cool. Okay. So going back to you're building out your shop at home because of home improvement stuff. And you've got the normal tools, and CNC is definitely, at least I would imagine back then, wasn't like a super common thing. Like where today you could get like an X-Carve or a Shapeoko. How did you get back into CNC? Did you try to go back to that project you did in college and make it better, or what brought your interest back to it?
Yeah. So there were a few kind of aborted attempts at it, over the years. So, at one point I went back to the project from college and discovered that it was just horrifically unusable. And time had not been kind to it either, because I'd used, just kind of polished steel rods, but they rusted. It's like it was a disaster. So I tried that at one point, tried reassembling it. It didn't work at all. Set it aside. A couple years later, I found some plans online for building a CNC out of MDF, just a really small format. It was like 6 inches by 6 inch travel, using MDF and just standard threaded rod. And so I cut that out on my table saw or whatever and assembled it and tried hooking up the electronics that I had left over from my first attempt. And I got it to kind of move, but it all kind of bound up because it was made out of MDF and my tolerances weren't great. So I set that aside again. And then maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even a little less, when the Shapeoko first came out, I said, huh, well, this is crazy because, 10 years ago, I spent hundreds of hours and hundreds of dollars trying to get a CNC built and got nowhere. And now you can get a Shapeoko kit for $500, right? Yeah. And you get something that actually looks pretty good. And so I started actually by buying the very first Shapeoko that came out. I had met Zach, the founder of Inventables, through Basecamp because they were just down the street. And so I knew him a little. And so I knew about the Shapeoko. So I bought one of the first Shapeokos that came out, put it together. And that was kind of the start of what's led me here. So I got the Shapeoko and then I said, well, this is great, but it needs a bigger spindle. So I put a bigger spindle on it. And then I said, this is great, but I want more travel than this. The stock one was like 1 foot by 1 foot of travel.
Yeah.
So then I supersized it and I said, okay, let's just take this design and scale it up. So I got bigger pieces of extrusion and longer belts. And I built, I think it was a 4x4 version. And I said, well, now this is pretty cool. Now you can do some real useful stuff with this. But how do I go to the next level? So I rebuilt it again, now kind of ditching the extrusion and the belts. And I got linear rails and rack and pinion drive systems. And that's kind of the point at which CNC transitioned from being, here's something that's cool to play with, to here's something I can actually do useful work and make interesting furniture and other projects with, because I can actually cut parts, in a reasonable amount of time and hold a good tolerance and not spend all my time debugging the CNC or dealing with snapped belts and stuff like that.
Yeah. So did you go into the production mindset? Like, I want to actually start like selling stuff with it, or has it always kind of been like a hobby for you?
No, it was always just a hobby for me. Over time you entertain ideas like, oh, cool, I can make a coaster now. What if I sold coasters? Right, right. And you realize, well, you're not going to have a business selling coasters for the most part.
Yeah.
But it was the fact that it is now a business for me is entirely accidental. The whole getting into CNC and getting to a decent CNC was entirely just kind of a hobby that worked out well.
That's cool. So on the map side of things, have you always been into maps, like choreography and all that kind of stuff? Like why the initial CNC cuts of those maps back in the day?
Yeah, so I've always loved maps. You know, when I was a kid, I had a world map on my wall that I would put pins in to mean something or whatever. I don't precisely remember, but I know that I had a world map and that was like a big thing for me. And I had a globe. And then when I worked in consulting, I did a lot of work with mapping. I was doing these analyses where we would break down the U.S. into different metropolitan areas and neighborhoods and stuff like that, and look at health insurance coverage in those areas. And we would do all these colorful maps and stuff to help people understand how things change geographically. So always loved maps and always kind of worked with maps in various ways. The doing the wooden map thing was purely hey, this is something that I could do. And I can actually remember it was Christmas Eve 2015 when I was like, I was home, I wasn't working, I was tied to my wife, and I thought, you know, I could make a map using the CNC. And at the time I was just thinking, oh, I'll just cut out, you know, from flat pieces of wood, the shape of each, the outline of each state, and then fit them together. And that would be a pretty cool thing. And then it occurred to me that actually I could do more than that, and I could make them topographic. And so that was kind of the start of this path that I've been on since then. It's just this idea of, hey, I like maps. I could make a map. And then I realized I could actually do it in 3D, not just 2D.
That's cool. So going into the actual project of doing the states and doing the full map, like, is there free US data that you're pulling this from? What's that kind of look like to get the actual file to start cutting?
Yeah, so that was kind of the hard part to figure out initially, was how do you actually get it? And there are a few pieces of software that people have made that will do really small areas, but nothing that kind of you could go and download a model of here's each of the states. And so the kind of source data that I used then and still use now is all from the U.S. Geological Survey. So back in the 90s, there was a shuttle mission that flew with a special radar that gathered this really detailed elevation data over the entire world. And so from the U.S. Geological Survey, I get image files that just represent, for a given geography, the elevation at a given point. And so from that, then I say, okay, well, then I'll take a border file, right, a vector file that shows the border of a geography. I'll use that, overlay that with the image file, trim it to the area that I need. And then there's a piece of software that I use, commercial software that I use, that does a bunch of stuff. I think it's designed mostly for people who do like virtual reality and visual effects type stuff.
Oh, cool.
But one of the things it can do is it can take this type of height map and turn it into a solid 3D model. And you can scale it and you can exaggerate different dimensions of it. And so with elevation maps, the really important thing to do is, if you don't exaggerate the elevation, your map ends up being, for most things, pretty boring.
Right.
Because even a tall mountain isn't really that tall in comparison to everything else. And so that was kind of the finding that piece of software was kind of the thing that let me go from here's the idea to here's actually, well, now I have a solid model and I know what to do with a solid model. I can cut that.
And was that Accutrans?
Yeah, so it's a software called Accutrans 3D, which is like, it's in some ways the kind of classic, not very good, but good enough Windows software. It like is not slick software. It's not particularly well documented. It doesn't follow a lot of the conventions that you think of as being good software these days. But it does what it needs to do extremely well. And it's the only piece of software that I've ever been able to find that can do it.
Gotcha. So even today, is that what you're still using when you're making new maps or trying new stuff?
Yeah. So every map I make ends up going through this Accutrans software. And I've automated it a little bit in that I have, like a Windows macro recorder that counts your mouse clicks and stuff.
Yeah.
So because, you know, I do a lot of different maps and different sizes and stuff. So I've automated it a little bit, but it's still like inherently clicking through this you know, kind of 90s feeling Windows application to make each map.
That's funny. Okay, so you have your 3D model. Are you importing that into something like Fusion 360, or how are you doing the actual CAM to cut it out?
Yeah, so it all goes into Fusion 360. And then kind of from there, it's actually a really straightforward toolpath in that every single map I do, I use a parallel toolpath. So it's literally just basically a raster. So it goes back and forth over the map with a little tiny ball nose and mill going up and down. So it's actually really straightforward to program from the CAM perspective, because like, there's nothing fancy going on. It's just a lot of stuff with a really small step over.
Yeah. Does the actual model, is it like super complex? Like, do you have to reduce that at all? Because I know Fusion can't handle like some super crazy stuff, which it feels like a lot of your... there'd be a lot of detail in the maps.
Yeah, that was actually the really big challenge I had when I first started doing this, is that at the time Fusion had a limit of 10,000 faces per solid model, which sounds like a lot. But when you're doing, you know, a map of Nevada or something that has a lot of mountains, 10,000 faces goes really fast. When I get a piece, when I get a model out of Accutrans, it might have anywhere between 1 million and 5 million faces, relative to the 10,000 limit, obviously had to be reduced. Fusion has since removed that limit, but you still have kind of a practical limit of, at some point the file just gets too big for it to process. So I reduced down all the files. And in fact, if you look at the first map that I made when there was that 10,000 face limit, you can actually see the facets of the 3D model that have been simplified down in certain parts of the country.
Gotcha. So once you've got it, are you taking it? Those first ones, were they still on kind of your cobbled together Shapeoko that you made bigger?
I think by the time I did the first one, I had ditched the kind of Shapeoko's drive mechanism. So I was using rack and pinion instead of the belt drive. But I was still basically using the Shapeoko's electronics. I think at that point I'd switched to using Shapeoko. Kind of the default is to use this Arduino thing called Gerbil. But I think by then I'd hooked up Mach 3 to it. But it was still basically a Shapeoko with a few modifications at that point.
Got it. And then now though, you have like custom builds from CNC router parts, is that right?
Yeah, so kind of over time, my Shapeoko evolved into basically being a CNC router parts design. So I use a few of their components on my first one, but it's very much a similar kind of design of aluminum extrusion with linear rails and rack and pinion. And then a few months ago, I decided, well, things are going pretty well, and I want both a bigger machine so I can do really big maps, but also other projects, as well as some redundancy. So I got a second CNC, which is just a straight up CNC router parts kit.
Yeah. And for people that don't know, it's, you basically can just buy a kit in it of different sizes, and it's pretty, it sounds like it's fairly easy to put together for the most part, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's it's basically an erector set. And so it's got very detailed instructions, and you just basically follow the instructions and put it all together. It's a lot of, you know, threading together bolts into threaded inserts. But the one that I did was a 5x10 foot one, so their biggest size.
Okay.
And it took me three or four full days to assemble it. But kind of the core of it takes about a day to a day and a half. And then what really takes a long time is the electronics and wiring it all together and getting it all calibrated and aligned and working the way you want it to.
Gotcha. Okay, so you said five by 10. Why so big? Do you see all this like expanding more and you just want more capacity, or... from going from, I guess, your garage to like a full out dedicated space now?
Yeah. So I knew that I wanted to go at least 4x8 because, I don't do a lot of, you know, plywood work. I do some, and I wanted to be able to just throw a full sheet of plywood on and cut it. And then once you get to 4x8, you say, well, 5x10 is only a little bit more when you can do, you know, it's like 40% more space for 10% more money. And by that point, I'd moved into my current shop, which is, 10 times bigger than my garage shop. So I have the space, why not? The big thing for me is that, one, I wanted more kind of throughput to do maps. And so having a second machine at all kind of doubles it. Most of the maps I do are, you know, they fit in the palm of your hand. So you don't need a 5x10 machine for that. But you can certainly use a 5x10 machine for that. Plus, you've got lots of other space to, at the very least, pile up, you know, piles of junk.
Gotcha. Okay, so go into the actual cut. Are you using hardwood? And are there special ways you're having to hold the things down? Because I imagine the shapes are kind of awkward to get clamps around it.
Yeah, so I do everything out of hardwood. I mostly use cherry, walnut, hard maple, and white oak, just because I do a lot of these fit-together maps. And so to do a fit-together map, you need four colors so that no piece touches another piece of the same color.
Cool.
And those are four woods that are kind of, they look good, and it's a nice combination. So those are the four hardwoods that I mostly use. Fixturing is really the hardest challenge with these maps. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do it. Because you're cutting something where you need to access all the sides of it, because you need to not only cut the top face, but you also need to cut out the border. The pieces are often really small. I'll do pieces down to the size of basically a pinky fingernail. There's a lot of different ones. It's not like you're doing 100 of the same shape or a rectangular shape or anything like that. And so what I do now is I use a vacuum fixture to hold down the boards. Basically just plane a board rectangular, and then I vacuum it down, and then I cut down, and I'll leave 30 or 50 thousandths uncut at the bottom. And I'll either run the board through a thickness sander to kind of free everything, or I'll use a flush trim router bit to cut off the last bit. And so that's been kind of the way to do it that I figured out. The other challenge is when you're cutting a map like this, you're taking off a lot of material from one side of the board. And so the board wants to warp. So if you do that, you end up with a map that's not flat and that doesn't fit together and stuff like that. And so vacuum's been really good at kind of holding everything down and flat while it cuts in order to get a good result. But I did
I did
lots of different things along the way. I think I started out using double stick tape. I used hot glue for a long time. Hot glue was kind of my way to go. And I was a big proponent of hot glue. The first map that I did is actually on my living room wall, and it's hot glued to my living room wall.
That's awesome.
Which is not how I do maps now and not what I would recommend, but worked pretty well. And then I did the kind of masking tape and super glue trick for a while, and then which works wonderfully, but is a lot of work to set up. And now I do basically all vacuum.
Gotcha. So I feel like I saw you've got most of the files on Thingiverse. Is that right? If people wanted to try this themselves?
Yeah. So I took the files that I used for my first map, which is kind of it's a 7-foot wide map, 50 pieces that all fit together. And I put those on Thingiverse. And I did that mostly because someone asked me to. And I figured, why not? I don't use those files anymore. They're limited to the 10,000 faces you could do at the time. And I've changed kind of the way in which I generate the data and do it. And I haven't been uploading all those to Thingiverse. You can go on Thingiverse and download the files and make your own map. And a few people have. Someone who worked at MakerBot 3D printed each of the pieces. That was on the wall at MakerBot for a while. I don't know if it still is. Other people have done them, either individual pieces or whole maps as well.
Gosh, I have to try that out. We do a lot of events kind of across the country for my day job, and it'll be a fun way to document it. But that's good to know that super glue worked, because I definitely have a vacuum holder on my little X-Carve. So that's really neat. It sounds like the designs have gotten more complex, and your process has gotten more refined, and you're able to produce more and more, especially on the throughput side of things. You sell these individually, but then you also sell them all put together. What's like the largest map that you've made? Maybe not to sell, but just in general.
Yeah. So the largest I made it would be like a 7-foot wide fit together map. I've also done larger individual pieces. So when you do a map like that, kind of the biggest piece is Texas, which ends up being about 2 feet by 2 feet. But I've also done some single piece maps that are quite a bit bigger than that. So I did a map of the continental U.S. that's 4 feet wide from a single piece of wood.
Okay.
Which is probably one of my favorite maps that I've done. I'm about to start on a project doing another kind of single piece map of about that size as well, which are just, you know, those are kind of statement pieces to hang on a wall. But those are some of my favorite. And I'd really like to do even bigger maps. You know, a 7 foot wide map of the US is basically the biggest size you can realistically put on a standard 8 foot high wall, because you've got furniture or something in front of it. You don't want it to go all the way to the ground. But I've done some maps of that are kind of a much bigger scale in terms of smaller areas and pretty big. And those are just really incredible, the detail that you get when you zoom in more. And so I'd love to do a map that's, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet wide. The catch is that ends up being, you know, 30 feet tall. So I haven't found a place to actually hang that yet. But that's something I'd love to do.
That's cool. So when you're doing, let's take like the Texas, you said, was it 2 feet by 2 feet mm-hmm. that's on your 7 foot map? How long does a cut like that take?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of the way I generally think about it is when I do a map of the US that's that size, it averages about an hour per state. Texas is probably 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours.
Got it.
And, you know, Rhode Island is 5 minutes. The things that kind of govern it is, one is size. So just kind of square inches. And I always do the same, I do the same toolpath no matter the topography. So I do, you know, a parallel toolpath with a very small step over. And so bigger states just inherently take longer. But then the other factor is terrain, because, you know, what ends up being the limitation on cutting is how quickly you can accelerate going up and down in Z. So Texas is actually surprisingly fast for its size, because most of Texas is pretty flat. Whereas you get California, which is smaller than Texas, but has these big mountains and valleys and stuff like that. And so California takes a lot longer.
Gotcha. So is California the one that takes the longest of the whole country?
Yeah, I think California probably is, because it's one of the bigger ones. Plus it's got the terrain.
That's cool. And did I see recently you're starting to laser in the rivers on top of the topography?
Yeah, so I've just started in the last month or so adding laser engraving on top of topography. And I've I've always done a little bit, or not always, but I've done a little bit of laser work here and there over the last couple of years, kind of as people have asked, you know, can you do a little heart over my hometown, or can you do an engraving on the back from my father, because it's a gift and I want him to know it's from all of us for Christmas.
That's cool.
But I've just started to kind of actually combine the engraving with the topography. So I did this map that you probably saw on Instagram that was a custom request from someone to do a topographic map of North America with all of the watershed boundaries on it. It just turned out incredibly cool, because kind of water runs downhill. And so you can see how these watershed boundaries match up to the topography in a really interesting way. And the final effect is just really interesting. So I'm starting to do more with the laser as well.
That's cool. So when did all of this turn into a business for you? Because if anybody right now could go to elevatedwoodworking.com and you sell all kinds of sizes and formats, but did you just get people continually asking you, hey, can you make me this? Can you make me this? You know, like I should start selling this for real?
Yeah, so exactly that. And it was totally, I never had any intention when I started doing this of it being a business. You know, I posted the kind of how it's made to Reddit, actually, when I finished my first map. And people were like, well, great, how can I buy one? And my answer then was, you can't. Like, I made one. The first one took me an incredibly long amount of time to do. And so, you know, at the time, the notion of making another one for a price anyone would pay was pretty ludicrous. But then kind of late in 2016, I started thinking, well, okay, I could actually sell these. And so I threw them up on Etsy, and I sold some on Etsy. And then kind of I really started thinking about it in terms of how to grow this as a business a little over a year ago, when I decided to get this commercial space, which I got partly because I wanted this to be a business, but also partly because I could, and I had a great opportunity to move up significantly from taking over my 2-car garage. But part of that was, well, if I'm going to take on this big space that is a commercial space, maybe I should do something pretty commercial with it.
That's cool. And so is that, Is that going well for you? Like, do you enjoy like the combination between more of the computer stuff you do for your day job and then getting to work, I guess, a little bit more with your hands on the side as well?
Yeah, it's really enjoyable. I work in the tech industry, which I work for a great company in the tech industry, but the tech industry as a whole is generally pretty vapid. And it's kind of hard to see how what much of the tech industry does impacts the world in any real way. It's nice to step away from that and do something tangible. And to actually go out and make something and see something. And then sending a map to a customer and getting feedback from them is a really enjoyable and rewarding experience. It's something that, I do work at Basecamp that then people react to and like, but it's not the same experience as they now have something of yours that they're hanging in their home or that they're giving as a gift. And so that's just a really rewarding experience to do. I make some money from it as a business too. But what I really do it for is I learn a lot about business and I learn a lot about people and I have a really good time doing it. And if at the end of the day it's profitable, great. I've made my hobby less of a hobby and something now that's profitable. But, it's still, that's not what it's about to me.
Yeah, that's cool. So I know you've got every state in the U.S. I'm sure you've gotten requests to do other countries or like even a world map. Is that something down the road for you that you want to do or have you tried something like that?
Yeah, so I've done a bunch of individual countries. Later today, I'm going to do an Iceland, done a bunch of other kind of European countries. And I have done a couple of world maps as well, doing a piece for each of the continents and then fitting it together kind of at the same scale as my big U.S. maps, but of the world as a whole. Those are really cool as well. They're in some ways easier because there's only seven continents, but they're also harder in some ways because the decisions you have to make about which map projection you use and how you actually mount this thing that's not all contiguous gets really, really interesting to work through.
Yeah, that's cool. Sweet. Well, thank you so much for jumping on and chatting. This stuff is crazy. And for people that want to check out all the stuff that you're doing, is elevatedwoodworking.com, is that the best place you'd send them if they want to check out your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Elevatedwoodworking.com is where I kind of sell all of my stuff. And then, I do a much better job at posting on Instagram than I do at updating my website. So I'm elevatedwoodworking on Instagram as well. And I post lots of kind of maps that I'm working on, but also technical stuff about how I do them and other projects and some stuff about the business of it as well.
That's cool. Well, sweet man. Well, I appreciate your time and chat with me. It was a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a lot of fun.